League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything. Farrell on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out. A bad seed, a broken day, a bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad, out of bad day, bad law, bad dude, bad breath, bad attention, bad vibes. We are live in the Farrell Palatial, right across the river and through the woods from where Granny likes to get her gummy bears and her lozenges as long as they're strong and go down with a JMO Rocks Ginger Shake Out. Ooh, in New York City, the Big Apple. Ooh, people just in plastic bags, they're ready to drive. Some kind of fashion jacket, I'm stupid. All my friends are coming around, flats and flats and party up. Rats on the west side, bedbugs uptown. What a mess, the town's a tatter. My brain's just splattered all over Manhattan. Shadoopy jacket, ooh. Hey, what's happening? Pharrell with you. Mafia's here. I've been watching this Giants of Africa show on ESPN. It's with Masai Ujiri, and he goes back to Africa, I guess, every year, and does these gigantic basketball camps in Ghana, Rwanda, and Kenya, and he just affects like hundreds of kids' lives. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. These kids come from squalor, like absolute third world squalor, and I mean, they have absolutely nothing. They have literally no food, no water, no electricity. Barely, I mean, no clothes, no basketball shoes. They don't have anything. They literally have nothing. And then they afford the opportunity, the great opportunity to go play in this basketball camp. And then they whittle it down to like 20 all-stars per camp. And they have all these NBA coaches there and Olympians and like players from that have some kind of connection to Africa. And they go back and affect all these lives. It really has. If you're watching it or have seen it or taped it, it is kick ass. And I've been really moved by it. It's Farrell on the bench. We got a lot to do tonight. Plus, Joe Lisi's on with us.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Farrell on the bench. So Ujiri's over there, right, doing this Giants of Africa basketball tour. And I just have to say, like, what I've seen of it, I've kind of been watching it pretty much. I'd say about 85% of it. And now I'm on, so I can't watch or listen. And this is, you know, the same studio problem I always have in my life. Like, when I'm watching games or I'm doing the show, I can't hear it. I just see it. I watch it, and I guess make up my own mind. But look, this guy is actually blowing my mind. I just think that he's doing incredible work, Ujiri. I mean, and the people with him too, like, you know, all of them, everyone involved in it, these coaches, these, you know, people that are with him, these Olympians, and like, there's chicks that are doing it. There's, you know, guys that are coaches in the NBA doing it. There's just friends of his that, you know, he's been involved with in basketball, and coaches from his childhood, and literally the African national coach from when he was a little kid playing, when he was a, you know, young man playing for this guy. And, you know, they brought him back. He's like old now, and it's been, he's known him for 45 years. Right. And he brings this guy out, rolls him out on the court. And these kids are like, who is this guy? Meanwhile, he's like the biggest thing that ever happened to basketball in Africa. Like, he put up every hoop. He coached every team. He coached every national team. He coached every Olympic team. He was just a titan in Africa in basketball. Like, and, you know, they got bigger fish to fry in Africa, believe me, you. I mean, this stuff is like crazy. These kids have nothing. I mean, literally nothing. They live in squalor. They don't eat for days. They literally, the one kid said, yeah, we pretty much fast from morning until night. And then he's like, that's because we have no food. And I'm just sitting there like, and it just tears at you. And then you're watching it and you're seeing this guy, Ujiri, just deep in it, right? Like, hands in the dirt, doing it all, busting his ass, changing lives, affecting kids. Like, the faces on these kids with literally, they're like, it's Christmas Day. And they're... it's literally Christmas Day to them because they're running suicides for 3 hours and they're just having the time of their life. I mean, they just think it's the greatest thing ever. And then they feed them like three times, right? They feed them like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And they haven't had three meals in 5 years. So seeing them eat is just the craziest thing. You're just like watching them and they're just like, oh my God, there's so much rice. They're just like pounding it and eating it. And then their eyes are just so lit up. And it's like the craziest thing. You see them, they listen to every word that they say, the coaches and Ujiri. They never disrespect them. They sing songs. They give them confidence. They talk about that they love basketball, that they love Africa, that they love themselves, that they love one another. And I was just blown away. They bring in this chick. She's an Olympian from Britain, but she's African, right? And, you know, one parent's from here, the other one's from there, right? So she's an Olympian, and, like, her dad was from Africa, the mother's from Britain, blah, blah, blah. And then she's all, like, intense. She's played at the highest level. And they're like, who is this bee coming in here? And then she's, like, yelling at him and coaching him like a real Division One coach, right, in like America, like a really hardcore, like a Pat Summit type. And she's just like lighting them up, and they're just like, whoa. I mean, instantly they were like, oh, snap. Okay. All right, then it's going to be this way, huh? And then they just ball out. And the funny thing is that, like, when they came to the camp, like, literally about, I think, 5 to 10% of them knew how to play. They literally never played. They literally... I mean, unequivocally never played. They were utter beginners. And they gave them the ball. And here they roll out 5 million basketballs in all three countries, Kenya, Rwanda, and I can't keep track of all of it. Kenya, Rwanda, and there was another one, Ghana. So they, I mean, they roll out like 100 ball. And these kids go through these stations. And all they, I mean, they are literally playing basketball for 15 hours a day. And then they go wash their clothes in buckets, not in like washers, in buckets with rocks and soap. And they don't even care. They're smiling while they're doing it. Can you imagine some American kid? Hey, Billy, go wash your clothes in the bucket out in the backyard. and see what you get. Kid roll his eyes, spit at you, give you the finger, you know, sleep with your wife. I mean,
forget even that. American kids, you go to one of these camps, you tell them, like, do some drills. I'm like, oh, this sucks. I want to play. When are we going to play?
They wouldn't even listen. They're suicides. I'm going to commit suicide. They don't literally, I mean, there's no respect. And they all think they're, you know, hot shack. And these kids are just like,
my mom says I can't do this.
Yeah, these kids are cheering on the other kids. And they're like 25 deep in line to get on the court, right? Like, so they play a game and then there's like, you know, 40 of them waiting, right? And then the next 10 go out. And then the next 10 and the next 10 and the next 10. It is just crazy. And then you just see the work and the bonding and the friendships and the everything, everything, literally everything about it. Injuries, you name it. They just grind and play and they make friendships and relationships and they talk. And for the first time ever in their life, they open up to this guy, Ujiri, about all their problems and everything. War torn, like kids, these kids are, you know, 15 years old, and the kid's saying, all my family was shot to death in the head. They blew off their heads. I ran. I got away. I ran 10 miles to the next village. Guy gave me a piece of bread. I was naked. I'm not even kidding. This stuff, like, I'm sitting there watching it. My jaw dropped open. These kids are like, oh, they came into my town and killed everyone at night and then burned them all. What do you mean they burned it? Well, they just shot them all dead and put them in a pile and set them on fire. And I'm just like, what? You know, it's just crazy, right? And then to see them balling and just falling into a better frame of mind and a better place and a better soul, and to see them happy and like cheering for one another and playing and supporting and alley-ooping and dunking and making shots and swatting shots and dribbling and singing and clapping and laughing and being friends. It's like the greatest thing ever. You see, I mean, these kids, they had the, like, this week that they spent a week or whatever it is, it is literally the greatest week they've ever had or may ever have in their whole life. That, like, it's the only thing they might ever get to do their entire life. That's how bad it is where they live. You have no idea. You can't even comprehend what it's like to walk a mile in their shoes. You have no clue in America. None of you. I mean to tell you. And I'm watching this, and they have absolutely a poverty like you have no, absolutely no idea. And meanwhile, they're happy as you would think they had $50 billion in the bank and a yacht and a big old party with a bunch of strippers on it and a live band and a DJ in the back and free champagne, Veuve Clicquot, and cocaine. I mean, they had it all going. Meanwhile, these kids have absolutely jack squalor nothing, and they're happier than anyone I've ever seen on the face of the earth. And it's just, that's what's so amazing about it. I am just blown away. Blown away. Meanwhile, I got a friend tell me a story about the owner of the Redskins, Dan Snyder. He said that he tried to do an interview with him, and he had to like write off. He had to sign off on like literally not asking him 5 or 10 questions about anything. You couldn't ask him anything. You couldn't ask him about the Redskins name. You couldn't ask him about he had rules. He had rules for his interview. Can you imagine? That's how snobby they are in America. You try to interview someone and you got to pass the litmus test before you do the interview. And I'd rather watch the story of the kids that have nothing that are playing basketball. It's just crazy. And I just am blown away by it. And then the coaches in America are so pathetic that you got to ask them questions before you ask them questions.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table. with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
All right, so if we're on a bench, so I give Ujiri huge props from a standpoint of just an incredible story, Giants of Africa. I have to say, I had no idea, obviously, that he did that until tonight. And now I always knew, obviously, that the guy was an incredible executive. He's, you know, really the most powerful black in the NBA when it comes to power in terms of running the Toronto Raptors, right? He's the head of everything. He's the man, and he won an NBA championship. Not only did he make it happen, he made everything happen. Kawhi Leonard, all the rest, right? So Siakam, you name it, this guy's done it. And then, you know, to see what he's done in Toronto, right, at least from afar, watching him in the NBA. And then remember, there was a point when we talked about him where he was, you know, being considered to, you know, run the Knicks, right? There was a lot of talk. You remember that, Mafia? We were doing the – we were talking about Ujiri running the Knicks when we were at CBS. I know for a fact. And – the fact of the matter is, it never. I never thought it would happen that he would leave Toronto for the Knicks. Although, I do think it's an attractive job running the New York Knicks, and I do think that I've said this. I think Dolan's checks cash. You know, you don't have a money problem with the New York Knicks. You have to deal with some things, right? Fair enough. But I think that he would have been really. It would have made him one of the most powerful men in the entire NBA, bar none. I think now he sets the bar very high for what he does. And I think that, you know, my final point of it is this, is that he's already accomplished everything you can dream of in the NBA, right? But what I'm seeing of this thing tonight, what I saw tonight, I was so blown away by it that I honestly believe he may be he literally might be the best thing that's ever happened to the NBA. I mean, this guy is, I mean, it was almost like, I swear to God, it was like I was watching Nelson Mandela run the basketball camp. And I mean that total respect. Like, it was the most powerful thing I've ever seen anyone do, really, in sports, let alone the NBA. What this guy's doing to change lives and like through basketball and through this global, they have this NBA has this global group. That's what it's tied into. So obviously the NBA is behind it, right? The NBA is involved in it and supporting it, right? Obviously they give them some, it would appear to me, funding to make it all possible. The basketballs, the uniforms, the getting there, setting them up with the camping and the, you know, the facilities and the basketball gyms and the outdoor courts and whatever, where they just, you know, the locations of these three different groups, these three camps in these three different parts of Africa. I just honestly, it was like, I've never seen anyone else really do anything even remotely close to it in terms of, you know, being impressed by somebody. Like I've seen a lot of charities and the like in my long career of doing this. I've seen a lot of, you know, groups and commitments to charities and being involved in all kinds of, you know, charitable and philanthropic endeavors and stuff like that. I'm not trying to be cute. I've been a part of a lot of them. Over the years. And I, you know, recently we had Todd McFarlane on. I did the whole ALS ball tour with Todd in 99 after Maguire Sosa hit all the home run balls. Same kind of thing, but I'm nobody. I'm nothing. I've never done anything for anybody, really. I did that, and I, you know, I'd do anything to help anybody doing whatever, but not like this. Like, are you kidding me? Like, this guy goes over and just literally, took over this group of kids, these lost kids, lost and forgotten kids, and these kids with no hope, no future, no nothing. They had literally, mud shacks they're living in, and to see what they did for these kids and what they did, to change their lives and to put a smile on their face and to help them and coach them and teach them about being a man and teach them about being a good person and loving one another, being involved in a team, teamwork, everything. Like, everything I saw about it, I was so blown away that, he's got to be, he's just absolutely, unequivocally has to be the best executive in all of sports that I've ever seen. I've never seen anyone do anything even remotely close to it. That's my point. I've never actually seen anyone do anything like it or even close to it, what I just saw that guy do. And then what I hear is that, not that I know anything, but it sounds like the guy does it every year. He goes back to Africa and does this every year. And you wouldn't last 5 minutes in this place. Literally, if there isn't one person that watches, listens, or otherwise works for us, is a fan of us, is, doing whatever in life, none of you, nor I, nor Mafia, none of us would last 5 minutes in Rwanda. I'd be like, get me out of here. So watching that guy go in there and just take over and just everyone love him and give him the respect that he deserves. And then what he does in return for those kids and the people there and those families and the impact that he has on their minds and their souls. It's crazy, crazy good stuff. So my hat's off to Ujiri. Oh my God. I've never seen anything like it. Nice job, dude.
Scotty, it just makes sense with all, you've seen so many guys that have come from there that are, making a great impact in the NBA, whether it be guys like Hakeem or, Manute Bol, and now guys like Joel Embiid. There's even guys who have come from other countries eventually to get to the NBA, like Luol Deng from England was, originally from there, or Dennis Schroeder they're talking about. There's so many guys that have had their origins there, and they're going to start that NBA Africa League that was supposed to start, I think, this year before everything started with the COVID. So, it's great to see him do that. It's great to see the NBA have the impact that they try to have there and, try to change these lives. Because as, it was said by, as you mentioned, Nets Meldella earlier, sports has the power to bring people together. So hopefully them doing that and bringing more leagues and more things there can help, enhance those people's lives and make it better for them.
And these kids were like taking the pill, right? The basketball, and they give them a basketball and everything else. And I mean to tell you, you talk about, have you ever seen a guy give a kid a puppy? And they treat that puppy like gold, right? And then this is different. They give them a basketball. And I mean to tell you, these people, they guard that thing with their life. And they literally, when they're done, they're just going to play basketball until that ball explodes. They're just going to play until the ball explodes, and then they're going to find a way to get another one. And they're going to play. And these kids started with zero skill. And then when it was over, they were hanging on the rim, dunking windmill dunks. I was in there watching them. They developed really fast. And it was like crazy because they're looking for talent. That's what they're over there doing. They're actually helping, coaching, and watching and seeing if there's anyone, frankly, that basically has the raw goods, size, muscle, everything else, leaping, reaching, jumping, swatting, if they have any of that Siakam in them, right? That's what they're looking for. And
yeah,
they even admit it.
Right. So, those guys come over and Embiid, I remember when they first had him and he was playing in college at Kansas, he's been playing basketball for 4 years and he was just dominating everybody still.
Right.
Because of his massive size. Imagine if you could develop these guys and work with them when they're younger. These kids that we have now go to these tournaments, AAU tournaments, fifth and sixth grade traveling the country. You're obviously not going to do something that crazy there or that scale because of everything that goes on. But, even just working with them a little bit when they're younger and letting them develop those skills over time would just be insane.
You know that? Who's that guy? Asabuki? Is that his name from Kansas?
Yeah.
Right. So that guy's the same thing, right? Like he's another one that's just had zero. He came over with like zero, like almost what a negative five in terms of 0 to 10, a negative five in talent. He'd never done anything. And then, you know, 4 years, 5 years later, the guy's, you know, he's going to be a top five draft pick. I mean, I don't even know where he is now. I think he's still there, right? Or he's getting or got drafted or he is getting drafted or he's got, you know, I remember watching him last year, right? And then the tournament got canceled, right? Isn't that guy, wasn't he just playing? And he's just a badass. The guy's a monster. No one in the Big 12 could stop him at all. Like, cause he was just a absolute animal on the boards and going into the paint. And that's what they're looking for over there. And a lot of these kids were huge, right? The other thing I noticed about them, a lot of them, because, you know, they kept talking about how they don't eat and they don't have food and they don't have money and they don't have anything. A lot of them were really skinny, right? And like super skinny, like Manute Bol skinny. But then there were some other ones that were just ripped out of their minds with muscles and ready to just hang on the rim and with their onions in your face. But I like watching it. I love watching anything like that, the basketball type documentaries. I really like the Man-Child Shea Cotton movie. Did you like that, Ma?
Yeah, it was great to see, you know, like what he went through and how he developed, you know, could ruin a lot of people and ruin their lives. And he took it and made it an even better story than what it could have been.
He was a great player. There's no doubt about it. But I like all these stories. And I was really impressed with you, Jerry. Good stuff tonight. Throw on a bench. All right, throw on a bench. So, anyway, there's a lot of stuff that I saved here tonight that I wanted to talk about, but, you know, not in any particular order, not in any kind of, we got to go, like, you know, first we'll start with this and then we'll end with this. I'm just going to, like, throw it all out there, right, so that we kind of just go through one thing at a time. And the first one is, the multiple teams are interested in Colin Kaepernick, and he could set up workouts closer to the training camp. And the story came out that there's all these teams interested in him. And that's fine. At least a couple of teams are serious about exploring Kaepernick, according to Big Eyebrow, your boy Michael Silver. Remember him, Mafia? In San Francisco with Sports Illustrated at the time.
Of course, big time.
So he said, isn't likely to be related to Kaepernick's history of on-field protests. It's not about that. Even if team ownership would inevitably have to sign off on Kaepernick's addition, instead, the former standout finds himself in the same situation that Cam Newton and Clowney do, which is a team that would be ready to sign him, would want to work him out. Just from a football perspective, forget about the other overtures, the political landscape. Just from the football perspective, most head coaches and coordinators and teams would want to get that comfort zone of putting Kaepernick through their own workout. That cannot happen right now because of the pandemic. And he may get a shot to return to the NFL, but it wouldn't come until toward the start of training camp, which is when teams are ready to begin their first in-person work of the 20 offseason. That is, if they open camp as planned, which I'm hearing, is that not July 28th, which is Carver High's birthday?
That's the date being kicked around right now.
That's the date. And then the next day would be my birthday. So training camp would open with droves of players working out and getting their quadriceps pulled. And, you know, that day after when you work out, that first big day, two a day, and the next day you wake up and you can't move your legs because you're so burned out, that would mean that on my birthday, every player in the NFL would be unable to walk. Thus, they'd be forced to stay in their beds drinking beer and reading dirty magazines.
It's going to be interesting to see how they handle training camp and all those workouts. If they do 2 days and things like that now with all the social distancing and things like that.
So remember when I think on Coast to Coast today, I said that the new owner is a Ford granddaughter, right? Or something like that. And the 94-year-old patriarch stepped down. And now I think the granddaughter is running the team. And she said, and I don't know her from a hill of beans, as they like to say in the south of France, but I don't know her from Adam. And all I know is that she's saying that she'd be, she'd have no problem at all signing Colin Kaepernick. And I said today, everyone says that now. Have you noticed that? Like everyone says, even Goodell, I have no problem at all with a team signing Colin Kaepernick. In fact, I hope it happens. And then every team in the league, do they not have at least one person say, I mean, every single team in the league now is saying, you know what? We have no problem at all signing Colin Kaepernick. And I'm going to leave that up to our football people.
Yeah. I would love to have him on our team. So you can try him out? Oh, no, we're not doing that.
We're very interested in Colin Kaepernick. I'm going to leave that in the hands of my underlings, the football people that run this operation. And if they think that
when they like, I'll make it out like, oh, well, you know what? You know, we'd love to have Colin. And, you know, I appreciate everything he did. I think he's a hero. But, you know, he's too good to be a backup. Or, you know what? I don't think we're the right fit. It's always that some reason on him. It's never like, oh, that we can't work him into our system. It's like, you know, the Chargers starting Tyrod Taylor. It's like, you know what? He's too good to be a backup. No, well, Tyrod Taylor's not good enough to be a starter. Put Kaepernick in there.
As soon as our football people feel as though he's, if they feel he's the right fit, we'll make that move. But we have absolutely no problem at all signing him. And I think that it's a good idea to sign him. I support signing him, and I'll let other people fall on that sword. It's just unbelievable. This chick had the team for 5 minutes and she's like, I got no problem at all signing Kaepernick, but I'm going to let my football people do that. I just was like, oh, you can't come in and swing that hard and miss. What is this, softball? Is there anything worse than striking out in softball? I mean, honestly, Mavi, have you actually ever struck out in softball?
Probably at one point or another, you know, you drink too many beers in the beer league and the ball is a lot smaller than you think it is.
Yeah. No, I don't strike out in softball ever. And if you do, you lie about it. You never admit to striking out in softball. Even if you're hammered, you cannot do it. So what team do you think Colin Kaepernick ends up on? What do you think? I was thinking, if I were the head of football operations, what I would say is the Steelers should sign him because Kaepernick is better than Mason Rudolph and your boy Duck Dynasty. I have no idea what they're doing with that guy. But I just feel like Kaepernick, you know, even 4 years removed, whatever it is from when they basically kicked him out of the league. He's still, I think, better than what they have. Do you have a problem with that, Mafia?
No, I don't have a problem with that at all, Scott. The thing is going to be, what does he want? What is he willing to, you know, do? Because is he going to take a job like that where you're going to be the backup and then maybe next year, the year after, when Big Ben finally hangs it up, you step in and you take over? Is he going to be okay with a situation like that? Or does he want a Chargers where he might be able to beat out Tyrod, or, you know, Raiders where he can beat out those guys? Or is it a situation where he wants to walk in and say, all right, we're going to sign you. We need you. You know, someone got injured and now you're the starter, where he doesn't have to work for it and fight for that job or sit behind anybody with a clipboard. If he's okay being a backup, sure. Steelers are great. But if he's somewhere where he wants to go and compete or have a chance to take the job over before the season even starts, then that's definitely not the place for him to go.
Yeah, I don't think that he's not going to start anywhere. That's what's going to happen. The guy hasn't played in 4 years. They're not starting him anywhere. I mean, if Cam Newton can't find a job, and I think that's all intentional too, by the way. Cam Newton isn't stupid. I think that, you know, being what he's accomplished and what he's already done in the NFL and where he's been in the NFL. Now, I know everybody thinks he's washed and he's injured and he's damaged goods and he'll never do anything again. He broke his foot. He had his shoulder operated on a couple times. Everyone thinks he's done. But I would take Cam Newton over Kaepernick 6 ways till Sunday. I mean, I wouldn't even think about it. Like, it wouldn't even be, not only would I not do it, I would even consider it. I'd be like, okay, I've got Cam Newton, I got Colin Kaepernick here. Thanks, Colin, for coming. That'd be the end of it.
Yeah, Cam definitely got screwed by the COVID, because if he was able to go out and actually show people that he's healthy or that he's recuperating and on schedule or ahead, like, you know, everyone's talking about with Tua, then I think he would have been, you know, maybe signed by the Bears or signed by the Chargers or, you know, one of these other, maybe the Jaguars. One of these teams would have grabbed him already if they could prove that he was healthy. But because nobody was allowed to go anywhere and do physicals and actually work him out and test him to make sure he's coming back and on the mend, that kind of put him in a bad spot where now he's to sit back and wait for someone to be able to, you know, get hurt or for him to be able to go to prove himself when he can go to these facilities.
I think that was his plan. I think his plan has been to, knowing that he had already had a rap that he was, you know, washed, right? That everybody's like, he's not a starter anymore. They're like, he's not a starter anymore. He's not going to start anywhere. And that was the word going around, was that he wasn't going to start anywhere. So what he did was, I think he decided, I'm not going to back up anywhere because I'm Cam Newton. I'm Superman. I'm a badass. And I've already proved this. I've been to the Super Bowl. You name it, right? I think what he planned all along was to wait until one of these star quarterbacks drops, which will happen. And then a team will be forced to not only sign him, but play him. That's what's going to happen with Cam Newton. That guy's not done playing football. You don't seriously think he's done playing football. Because you know he's going to play. It's just when. It's someone's going to get hurt, and that'll be that. And he's going to get that job, and they're going to go to the well. They're going to hire him, and they're going to give him a deal, and he's going to play. And we'll find out what he's got left then. Because I'm not going to judge him. I know all these geniuses on the TV and radio think that they have it all figured out. Everybody's a genius. All I know is this, is that guy is not done. Because he broke his foot, right? Liz Frank, whatever it was. And then shoulder 2 times. I mean, there's guys that have played in this league for 15 years that have had 11 surgeries. There's guys that have had 5 on each knee. And they're still playing. I mean, that's just the bottom line. There's no way that I'm shutting him down because he broke his foot. And I know he's had 2 shoulders, whatever. Like, have you not seen the guy throwing the ball like a rocket all over the place in his training? And even in the COVID, you saw recent footage of him throwing the ball, right? I don't put much stock in all the videos of some guy going out to a high school field and throwing, zipping passes for 30 minutes or an hour. It really boils down to what's he going to do after, you know, 5 or 6, 10 games of throwing the football 35, 40 times a game, whatever it is, and then taking hits. Is he going to be able to stand on the field on Sundays? That's what it boils down to, right? So I think the guy can still play for sure. And I think that, you know, I would be willing to say he's toast when he, if he has another one, right? If he has another shoulder and another, you know, he breaks his foot again or something or blows out his knee or Achilles, that's different. But the guy broke his foot. Like, guys have broken their feet. I broke my hand. I mean, I broke my kneecap. I've had both feet, like, basically broken. I've had every bone in my foot damaged. I've had bones I've had everything. I still play. It is what it is. I think the guy, you know, Mafia, I mean, come on. I've seen guys break their feet and come back from those injuries. I mean, when you're young, and I don't think he's super young, but I think obviously he's a lot younger than me. He's going to heal better than me. So I still think the guy's got game. I think at some point he's getting a job and he's going to play, and then we'll see if he gets the last laugh. I always thought the guy was a really good player. And then I think after the Super Bowl experience, when he acted like a tool after they lost, I think everyone turned their back on him. I think all of America, I think football fans, I even think people in Charlotte turned their back on him, right? I think that when that happened, people gave up on him. And they just were like, screw this guy. Who does he think he is? I'm done with this guy. And then, you know, he got injured. He's a hack. He's washed up. He's done. Who does this guy thinks he's special? He can't even stay on the field. He's a wussy, all this other stuff. I mean, that's all there is to it, right? And I mean, the media turned on him. How about recently they did the thing where they said that he wasn't even they didn't even nominate him as one of the best players ever. They had they had all these players, Steve Smith, right? What's his name? Pepper. What's the guy's name? The Rush, Julius Pepper. And then Luke Kuechly. Cam Newton's better than all three of those guys combined. That's just all there is to it. Yeah, just do it, baby. FOTB, Pharrell on the bench. Can we go to John and shopping off to buy phone? Yeah.
Scotty, I'm loving these late night shows, man. Thanks for doing them.
Yeah, man. I'm glad you're digging it. I know Mafia said he wanted to talk about the Universal DH. Are you excited about that and baseball eventually coming back in late July?
It's really the only idea that I like about the whole thing because, you know, we both know that the Universal DH is never going back to what it was. But, like, let's finally get on the all same page, same rules for both leagues. What are we doing, like, having this rule that goes up all the way to 2019? We should have gotten rid of this, like, years ago.
Look, all I know is this, is that the DH in the National League is going to happen in this 60-game short COVID season. It is what it is. And then next year, it's not going to be there. From what I'm hearing, I've asked everyone, people have been on this show that are deep inside of baseball, and they're all telling me the same thing, that it's this time only. That's it. They're not doing it next year. Now it's going to have to be negotiated into that CBA after next season, which is the 21 season. So you have this 60, and then you're going to have a $162. Then they're going to have another labor war. They're going to have another owners, players union battle, Galactica. I mean, it's going to be the same thing all over again. Now, I know Scott Miller today from Bleacher Report said hopefully they've learned their lesson and they won't go there and have two summers out of three with a disaster on their hands. But in my opinion, unequivocally, that's exactly what they're going to have. The talk of them learning from the past, they've never learned from the past. Every single time they've ever had a chance to have labor wars, they've had them. So get ready for the same thing after the 21 season. Count on it.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.